From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lilly.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on Veterans Radio. Good morning to all of our troops on land, at sea, and in the air. You have our thanks and admiration. Good morning to my fellow veteran brothers and sisters. Good morning to all. My name is Gary Lilly, CB, Chulai 66, can do. In the booth is the old slick pilot himself, Dale Thronberry.
Good morning.
And Dale, we've got a show that's going to be of special interest to me today because I want to go back to Vietnam. We've got three guys that just returned, one from his 16th trip back, and two, this was their first time back to their old battlefields.
I don't understand. Hopefully by the end of the program, I'll understand why you guys would want to go back there.
Well, that's what we're hoping to find out, and maybe it'll change the minds of a few people that don't want to.
That's true. That's true.
Right. But right now we've got some news. Is that right?
Yes, we do. Actually, the first piece of news, what I wanted to do was to correct a story from last week. We had talked about the Vietnam Memorial. The wall had been desecrated by, we thought were by a mistake, but it turns out that it was not a mistake. Now, I know you were in Washington last week at the time, and you could probably give us the up-close and personal story.
I was, and the first night we went to the wall, I was back there for my battalion reunion, MCB3, Mobile Construction Battalion 3. Went down to the wall that night, and clearly it was an act of vandalism. It looked as though somebody had a big can of oily substance and walked past the wall, holding it down by their legs, spraying it the entire length. Now, the Park Service initially said it was an accident, but I think that they were trying to prevent controversy. And they say it hit 14 panels. I'd have swore it hit more, but they did spray it the entire length. A lot of it was just on the trim stones that are at the base of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And they were working on cleaning up two panels, and they're going very slow on that to make sure they don't create additional damage. But it was vandalism, as confirmed by one of the Park Service officer on guard that night.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because obviously the story was getting confused that was going out. At first it was vandalism, then it was not vandalism, and glad to get that straightened out. A story a little bit closer to home here is that Mike Ilitch, who is the founder of Little Caesars Pizza, has been awarded the Secretary's Award from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. This is the highest tribute that can be given to a civilian by the department, and it's for the franchise opportunities that Mr. Ilitch is offering through Little Caesars Pizza. He gives some really great discounts, waives a lot of fees for veterans coming back that want to open up a Little Caesars franchise. So I would suggest that if you are interested in that, contact the Little Caesars, and they will get you all of that information. But congratulations from Veterans Radio and from all the veterans out there to Mike Ilitch, who was a former Marine.
And that's another case of veterans taking care of their brothers, veterans helping veterans.
That's true. I thought it was kind of interesting, though, to piggyback on the program we did a couple of weeks ago about franchise opportunities and funding opportunities that are being made available to veterans through the Small Business Administration.
Truly. And I heard Ilitch talking, and he said that, and I'm not clear if it was his idea to begin with, but His people that worked for him took off on this, and he said he'd never seen them so excited on a project before, and so he just stepped back and let them run with it.
I think it's great. I think it's a great opportunity for everybody and to take advantage of. Okay, well, we all remember, hopefully some of you out there remember the Osprey airplane combination helicopter airplane. Well, the Osprey squadron is heading off to Iraq. 22 V-22 Ospreys, the tilt-rotor aircraft that has spent decades and gazillions of dollars out there to be developed, is on its way through the Marines. Medium tilt-roller squadron 263 left Monday for training, and then will be deployed to Iraq. The thing I thought was interesting about this story is that the squadron is dubbed the Thunder Chickens. And the Thunder Chickens was the name of my gun platoon in Vietnam with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company. So good luck to the new Thunder Chickens. The Osprey takes off vertically like a helicopter and flies like a plane. I've heard that one before.
Well, they did have some accidents, and it looked like it was pretty dangerous to begin with. Hopefully they've got that cured.
I hope so. Another story that I thought was really interesting, Gary, was that the Veterans History Project is coming under some scrutiny because there's a number of people that have reported false stories. As many as 50 people have claimed to be Medal of Honor recipients that were not. A large number of people claim to have received Silver Stars and so forth, and they're going back and vetting out many, many of the oral histories that have been taken to make sure that they're accurate. It's too bad. Come on, you guys. This is your one opportunity to really tell the truth. So,
right.
You know, if you're going to tell a war story, tell the real one.
And is that a violation of the Stolen Valor Act?
I believe it is, because the article came from Stars and Stripes, and it says the Vets Project contains false MOH stories, and they're a little upset, and I would be too.
Absolutely. There's nothing more despicable than to claim you're a hero and that way diminish the value of those who truly were heroes.
Anyway, it's...
Well, you know, in the last census, DOD estimates that there's 1 million Vietnam vets left alive, and of that million, 13,400,000 checked off on the census that they were Vietnam veterans.
Oh, I know. There are many more of them out there. All you got to do is have them pronounce a village, and that'll do it.
Right.
on a positive, more positive note, the project helps wounded veterans rebuild. Missouri National Guard soldiers and other volunteers from Kansas City is helping to remodel the home of a local wounded soldier, retired Sergeant George Bellis. I think this is just great. Again, another idea of veterans helping veterans. And congratulations to those people out in Missouri from the Missouri National Guard for doing that. Good job.
We had a similar situation in one of the wounded Iraq vets in western Michigan. Always wanted to live in the country. He was given the keys to a home that was on 5 acres and about 1,400 square foot ranch, handicap accessible. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't totally free, but the mortgage was only $25,000 on it. So probably about $150,000 was donated by local people and builders.
Well, I think it's really interesting that again, veterans are coming to the aid of other veterans.
Absolutely.
The final story is that the people out at Stanford University are getting a little all upset because Donald Rumsfeld has been nominated to become a member of the Hoover Institute out there, and which is a more of a conservative type of think tank, and we know what Stanford is, but they're upset about Rumsfeld being nominated to be on that particular organization. Good luck.
And is it Stanford where, what's her name that was?
Condoleezza Rice was a provost out there.
Okay, but I think it was Berkeley where you've got, the lady that was tried for smuggling the guns in on the Black Panther trial. And
Angela Davis.
Yes.
Holy mackerel, she's, we're old.
Yep, oh, are we ever. Yep, she's a professor out there.
Okay, we're going to go back right now to our Welcome Home segment of Veterans Radio. And each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of their country. Welcome home to members of the 108th Division of the Army Reserves based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also welcome home to 140 members of the 118th Military Police Company, 503rd Military Police Battalion of the 16th Military Police Brigade, who have returned home to Fort Bragg. Welcome home to members of the Illinois Army National Guard, 1744th Transportation Company, who were welcomed home by the town of Streeter, Illinois, with a parade and celebration. Hundreds lined the streets as the unit was escorted into town by members of the Patriot Guard. Good going, guys. B Battery of the 115th Field Artillery Battalion of the Tennessee Army National Guard returned home to Shelbyville, Tennessee, with a new name. They're now the Company G Forward Support Company Regional Regimental Support Squadron 278th Armored Cavalry Regiment. Jeez, all the numbers here. And finally, members of the U.S. Army Reserve's 99th Regional Readiness Command 298th Transportation Company has returned home to Pennsylvania after their 15-month tour in Iraq. The unit's buses were greeted by miles of motorcycles, all members of the Patriot Guard. Others joined in the motorcade were police cars with sirens blowing, fire engines, private vehicles with their horns blaring. Townspeople lined the streets of Franklin, Pennsylvania, clapping and waving their welcome home banners. Good job, Franklin. Welcome Home is sponsored by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. Visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. And before we get into our show today, I just wanted to mention that we're running a little short-handed right here. Dale is doing two jobs back in the booth. That's because Ken is on vacation, but Bob Gould, whose son died a couple of weeks ago, was hit with a double whammy. And this past week, his mother passed away. So he's down in Florida. And Bob, you've got all of our best wishes, our consolation. So Bob, look forward to seeing you come back. Take it easy, brother. On the phone, we've got Dave Fenster out of Fresno, California. Can you hear me, Dave?
Can I just call you back?
Dave?
Sorry,
no, I guess we don't have
all
Dave.
Right,
We're going to have Jim Doyle of Fresno, California. We're going to have Dave Fenster of Fresno, California, and we're going to have Don Wilkinson of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Jim Doyle has been back to Vietnam 16 times now, and Dave Fenster and Don Wilkinson are both just returned from their first trip. Jim Doyle and Dave Fenster were both grunts, infantrymen. Don Wilkinson had I forget what he said, he was in supply or something like that, but they were running convoys over the Anque Pass, and the bad guys kept shooting at them. So we're going to hear their stories today and their reactions. Are either of you on the line right now? Not yet. All right, I'll just keep covering it. And just one moment. So I know that Jim Doyle has been very, very active with Vietnam Veterans of America. I will find out soon how he met Dave Fenster, who's also out of California, and Don Wilkinson, who's out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, how these guys got together to make this trip.
Hang up. I'll call you right. Are they
I hear Dale frantically working back in the booth. I know that there were people online. And anybody there yet, Dale? No. So I was planning on going back to Vietnam this past March, and we had to end up canceling the trip out because the travel agency had really botched things up. And 10 days before the trip, we canceled. Great amount of anticipation, planning it for 6 months, had all of the shots. So if anybody out there needs some never used typhoid shots, I'll be glad to share them with you. Don Wilkinson, are you on the line?
Just got rid of him again. I'm sorry.
They're coming and going. We had Don Wilkinson. So when you go back to Vietnam, what you have to do, of course, is get plan well in advance to make sure you have your passport. The government is running real slow on those things. And get your visa from the Vietnamese embassy. Mine came out of Seattle, I believe, and you can also get them out of Washington, D.C.
Sorry, Gary. I'm trying to get them back on again here in a second.
Okay, that's fine. Check with the VA healthcare system and get your shots over there, or you can go to your own private doctor. But if anybody remembers how we lined up for those shots, they were giving them to us in every arm, and as you walk through, it looks like the Indian gauntlet. And then as you got through the whole line, you pulled down your pants.
I think you've got Don now.
Don, are you there? Not yet. Can you push a button?
How's that one?
Hey, we got a live one here.
Okay.
All right.
This is Don, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Don, thanks for being on the show. Don, you were a grunt over in Vietnam, weren't you? What years? Bye, Don. I think you pushed the wrong button, Dale. When we get them back on, perhaps the thing to do is have them one at a time. Those buttons back, if anybody could see that board, there are buttons and levers, and it's about 5 feet or 6 feet across, and it's a lot to handle for the very first time. But make sure you get your shots. I'm told by Jim Doyle and others that have been there that you can actually book your own trip. Just you don't have to go through a travel agency if you choose not to. If you want to go back, fly in, make reservations, you can do it online at a hotel. And when you get to the hotel, they can line you up with a driver and interpreter. And they'll get you to the local places. So how are we doing back there, Dale?
I've got Don on one more time.
Don, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Hey, maybe what we can do is just have one at a time.
Okay.
All right. So, Don, good to have you on Veterans Radio. You made a trip back with Jim Doyle, who'd been there 16 times. How did you and Jim first meet?
Well, Jim and I served in the same infantry outfit, but at different times. And then a couple of fellows had a reunion four or five times. And through one of those or a couple of those reunions, Jim and I met and kind of liked each other and began to talk. And he had told me that he was going back and forth, and I expressed an interest in making a trip. And this was the result of it. So
when you left Vietnam, you were probably thinking, like the rest of us, thank God I'll never see this country again?
Given it was 40 years ago, I'm not exactly sure what I was thinking. I do remember being glad to leave. I don't know if I had too much in my future.
I remember being there and looking around and thinking, my gosh, what a beautiful country under any other circumstances. Did you have that same feeling? I actually liked the people. Of course, they weren't shooting at me like as regularly as they were shooting at you.
That's true, and I don't think there's anybody that's any more isolated than an infantry guy. A friend of mine says they just paint you green and stick you in the grass, and... But we were fairly isolated from the populace. But when we did get a chance to meet them and to be with them a little bit, I did like them. They were very friendly then. As far as being pretty, I did always think the country was very pretty.
What area did you serve in?
It was just north of Saigon. If you go right straight north of Saigon, up Highway 13 was our area of operation.
Okay, but did it have a name at all, or a three corps?
We were in the three corps,
yep.
And in that was the Michelin rubber plantation,
okay,
the Iron Triangle, some things like that
all
that
right.
Were a little
notorious,
a little more specific.
So you're an infantryman, a rifleman, right?
That's a mortarman.
mortarman. You saw combat.
I did.
And bad experiences over there, I assume, in combat?
Well, it's one of the most exhilarating things I've ever experienced. A lot of adrenaline, and it's not pleasant at all, no.
Right. So you had bad memories about what took place. What were you thinking about when it was time to go back? What caused you to want to go back?
Hey, this is Dave Finster here. Can you hear me now?
I can hear Dave, yes, and I think we lost Don. I see Dale throwing his hat around in the booth back there. Well, Dave, we're going to switch over to you. What years were you? You were in Anquet. Is that the Central Highlands?
Central Highlands. I was Anquet and Pleiku and also down by the coast in Quinyon. And 70-71 when we were pulling units out, so big chunk of my job was to try and recover equipment. So I made a bunch of trips up Highway 19. Now, and what was the question? The last one you had?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're going through right now, because as you start talking about it, all of a sudden you get that slideshow, or for the younger people, that PowerPoint presentation of lots and lots of scenes flashing through your mind, and you've kind of forget where you are. Is that correct?
Something like that, yes.
Okay. So you were, technically, what was your job?
The job, I was a U.S. Army Quartermaster Corps and assigned as
right.
as a fixed assets officer for the Quinyon Area PX system. You know, I thought I was going to spend the war in an office or a warehouse, but as usual, the Army had other ideas, so I was on the road all the time trying to bring back precious military equipment like pizza ovens and cash registers and things. What's wrong with this picture, huh?
Right. And in the meantime, the country was being overrun. So when you were running that highway, people kept shooting at you. Is that correct?
Yeah, funny thing. They were doing that either on the highway or right outside of Quinyon or up in Anquet. Just, yeah,
now,
plenty of times.
What caused you, you're a retired minister, what caused you to want to go back to Vietnam?
I'm not quite sure. I just knew I wanted to go back and see if I could find maybe something with the country being at peace might help me to be a little more at peace. And so it was sort of, not in so many words, but something like that.
When I came back from Vietnam, it was early in the war, and it kept going on, and mm-hmm. I was feeling this draw to go back, and I wouldn't even tell my best friend about it because I thought I must be crazy, and I mean that mm-hmm. in the literal sense. I was worried about my sanity, but there's something about that country that causes you to, it draws you back, doesn't it?
Yeah, I kept remembering, thinking that if it weren't for the war, this would be a really beautiful country, and I wanted to see it without the war.
Okay, so when you got over there, you were with Jim Doyle and Don Wilkinson, and you guys traveled around. Tell us what happened when you got to Anquet.
Well, when I got to Anquet, I recognized the shapes of the mountains and everything, but I didn't recognize the big town that's grown up around there or a lot of other stuff, and I was going, wow, has this ever changed? And yet at the same time, some things remain the same, which had to do with the fact that we kind of had to get some special permission to drive down Highway 19, and we're told we would not be able to stop in Anquet because there are a couple of big Vietnamese Army installations where our places used to be. So I got a picture of the top of Hong Kong Mountain, and that's about it of what was there then.
And what happened when you finally did get a chance to stop and talk to people? Did you?
Oh, wow. It was actually when we met with the Veterans Association of Vietnam in Da Nang City that, you know, they said, where were you and when, just like you have now. And when I mentioned Anquet and Pleiku and Quinyon and Highway 19, old soldier from the other side said, me too. When? And I said, 70-71. He said, me too. And so we figured out that there is almost 100% chance that we actually were shooting at each other back in 1971, and we took the opportunity to congratulate each other on living to see the day when we could shake hands. I still don't have words to say exactly what that meant to me, except that if nothing else had happened the whole trip, that would have been worth it.
And
it's
so,
like personally making peace.
And I've heard so many people say that. We're going to have a big adventure right now. Not quite as big as going to Vietnam, but I'm going to push this green flashing button. And I don't know who's on that line, but Dave, if this is the last you and I speak, it's been good talking to you. Here goes the button. Hopefully you're going to stay on. Lost Dave. And who's on this line?
I'm here, Don. It's Don again.
Hi, Don. Good talking to you again. We just lost Dave. He got to tell the most important part of his story. Were you listening to that?
I did, and I'll tell you, from an observer sitting there watching those two figure that out, and then for the next 10, 15 minutes, that was the most amazing thing I've seen. Bonding instantly, talking. It took two interpreters. We had an interpreter and they had an interpreter, and it took both of them to keep up with them for a few minutes. They were just so excited. And that was probably the highlight of the trip for me too, also, was that watching those two guys reconnect, if you have it that way.
Is there ever a time that you believed that that was possible back in what years were you there? 70, 71 or?
Well, I was there. He was there in 70, 71. I was there in 67, 68.
Okay. All right. And that's how Vietnam veterans or greet each other with, you know, I'll say Chu Lai, 66, and you'll say, Parrot Speak, 67, 68.
Right.
Did you get back to any of the areas where you had combat?
We did. We got into one portion of the area. As you know, Jim Doyle does some sponsoring, and they've gone back to try to do good or make amends. I don't know exactly how you say that, but we were up in an area where we were called Phuc Vinh, a couple of hours out of Saigon, and we managed to find a hospital, make a connection with a fellow, the Veterans Peace Initiative is going to maintain a relationship with them. But while we were there, I had a feeling, I've been here, but it has grown so much that I just kept walking around thinking, well, this could be it, this could be it. I knew I was there, but I was not quite sure how to put my finger, say that, you know, that's the point, or there it was. So everything's changed, but nothing's changed.
Right. I've heard that a lot of the places where guys fought in the jungle, they go back in their tapioca fields now or coffee plantations.
That's true.
The population, I think, has doubled since we were there.
At least there's 70% of the population has been born since the war, since 1975.
Really?
And there are just a lot more people everywhere.
When they see Americans for the first time, and probably most of them aren't seeing them for the first time, but what kind of a reaction are you getting?
I would say it's a little typical that, you know, they stare at you because you look different. Westerners, especially up in areas like Phuc Vinh, that are not real tourist areas, but they have no hesitation to warm up. You say hello, and you get a big smile back almost always. And they are very intent on speaking English. So if they've had any English at all, they begin to want to practice it
and
enter in dialogue with you.
The military, I'm sure you came across military people over there. They're all young,
born
after the war.
They're... Since 9/11, all the embassies have armed guards out in front of it. That's in Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi. But out in the populace, we were out in an area in Phuc Vinh, and a soldier on a motorcycle came up. He was not armed. Told us, you know, that we were basically where we didn't belong, and and then invited us over to a museum. So, but yeah, they were all pretty young. And
Don, hold on to that thought. We're going to come back right after this break.
Okay.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Nelson Britton killed 20 enemy soldiers and destroyed four automatic weapons. Details after this.
If you're a recent Air Force veteran, you probably spend some time comparing your new civilian life with what you had on the Air Force. Maybe the grass isn't as green as you thought it would be. Well, you might have a chance to come back. We're looking for people in certain career fields to return to active duty. Maybe your job's on the list. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
Britton, a member of Company I, volunteered to lead his squad up a hill with meager cover against murderous fire. He ordered his squad to give him support, and in the face of withering fire and bursting shells, tossed a grenade at the nearest enemy position. On returning to his squad, he was knocked down and wounded by an enemy grenade. Refusing medical attention, he replenished his supply of grenades and returned, hurling grenades into hostile positions and shooting the enemy as they fled. When his weapon jammed, he leaped without hesitation into a foxhole and killed the occupants with his bayonet and the butt of his rifle. He continued to wipe out foxholes and, noting that his squad had been pinned down, rushed to the rear of a machine gun position, threw a grenade into the nest, and ran around to its front where he killed all three occupants with his rifle. Less than 100 yards up the hill, his squad again came under vicious fire from another camouflaged, sandbagged machine gun nest well flanked by supporting riflemen. Britton again charged this new position in an aggressive endeavor to silence this remaining obstacle and ran direct into a burst of automatic fire that killed him instantly.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
There he is. Feed was going us back.
Hey, Don, we're back with you. Forgot to warn you that you're not going to be able to hear the commercial, so it's going to sound like dead air to you on the other end.
That's okay.
All right, good to have you back. It's been an adventure this morning.
Yeah.
We're talking to Don Wilkinson of Fort Wayne, Indiana, former rifleman in Vietnam, 67-68, up in Three Corps, north of Saigon. And Don just returned from Vietnam in the last couple of days, and we're talking about his experiences right here on Ave Maria Radio. Don, the country looks the same but different. The people are different. You were talking to us about the modern military in Vietnam, the Vietnam Army. They were all born after the war. What are they like?
Well, we didn't get too much of a chance to work with any of the military other than in Hanoi. We did work with some unexploded ordnance teams. Those are young guys, and they're soldiers. They take their job seriously and do it diligently, and very proud of what they do. So I would guess that would be my assessment from here on this.
I imagine they have a lot of work to do over there.
Unbelievable amounts of unexploded ordnance left over.
Now they found a lot and used it against us during the war, but they also put out a lot of minefields themselves, and supposedly our guys mapped ours, probably didn't leave the maps behind, but I don't think they mapped theirs.
Well, had a chance to talk with two different groups of people. Unexploded ordnance is a huge issue, and there are lots of NGOs and as well as the Army that are working on it. So there's lots of teams in lots of areas. But if I understand it correctly, that landmines are a smaller problem because they have been able to find a lot of those. Also, landmines are near the surface, so they've got some areas cleared, although not all. They're still a problem, just not as big as they used to be. But unexploded ordnance, we put a lot of rounds in from artillery and from aircraft, and that seems to be their biggest problem at the moment.
Well, over in France, I know in some of the battlefields left over from World War One, they have the farmers are actually trained on how to handle some of this stuff, and they're still plowing up shrapnel and unexploded ordnance from World War One. So I can imagine Vietnam, where we put out a lot of ordnances, has a big problem.
It is, and what they tell us is that 80% of the accidents are people who simply are, they stumble onto it or they find it or they begin to manipulate it, and, they're just unaware of the problem. So education, trying to educate the people how to do or what to do with it is as helpful as anything.
Tell me about your feelings when you first arrived. You stepped off the plane where?
The second time we were in Tonsonute Air Force Base, or I'm sorry, Tonsonute Airport in Ho Chi Minh City.
Right.
And it is a brand new airport, so I might as well have been in Chicago or Hong Kong or any place that where you have a big airport. There wasn't as many people, but it still was fairly sterile airport environment.
Now, one of the things that you hear from everybody that went over there during the war is the first thing impression you had when you stepped off the plane was the heat.
Yeah.
I assume that the weather hasn't changed since we've left, but how did that hit you, or did you step into an air-conditioned airport?
Well, yeah, it was air-conditioned until we got through customs. You land and you do what you do when you enter a new country, and eventually you come through immigration and customs, and then they turn you loose. And we walked out on the street, and there were an awful lot of people meeting the arriving flights. So we walked into basically a crowd and taxi drivers, and it was pouring down rain. It was late. I was tired, and the heat was just blasted in your face. It was. I did remember that.
So you were... You were down in, this is going to be hard to say, Ho Chi Minh City. I've never said it before. I still say Saigon. And you were down there, and it was raining. Up there in Chu Lai to the north, the weather, the monsoons hit in the beginning of October, and they went till about the end of February. Was this just rain, or it wasn't monsoons down that way, was it?
Well, we missed the monsoons. We did have some rain, but in terms of weather, it was pretty ideal in terms of our vacation or our trip back in. We got some rain, but it never really affected us when we were out trying to do things. So it was, I was kind of looking forward to maybe a monsoon rain or two. And we had one, but not like I did, not like I remembered when I was out in the bush.
Well, I always say when I'm a member of Vietnam Veterans of America and we do some parades locally, and when the weather is threatening, I'll always say it never rains on Vietnam vets because we've seen rain and it does not occur in North America.
No, that's true. It doesn't.
So how many days did you spend in your old area of operations?
Basically two of the 18 days. So that is... That's going to prompt my next return trip. Will be to spend more time in that AO.
So you are going back?
I think I will. It didn't take me very long to figure out. There's still some things that I want to do.
And was this a? It was a healing process, then I take it.
Yeah. Jim says, you know, you replace the old memories with new memories, and then I met an Australian who said that. You know, it's going to take a few weeks before you really figure out how and what has changed, but I can tell you it was a changing experience.
Well, I helped build the Chu Lai airstrip, and that was, I don't know, 10 or 11,000 foot with a 3,500-foot crosswind runway. I was on the crosswind runway part of it, and some people have said, wow, you guys did a good job. They're still using it. Now, I got on the air in planning for the trip back that I was going to take, they're building an industrial area around it of thousands of acres and a city of 200,000 where there were rice paddies. A city of 200,000 that'll work in that industrial area.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's begun or not. I want to get back there when I can still hopefully see a little bit of what it looked like back then.
Most everything that we installed... is gone. There's some Quonset huts or whatever you call those things that the airplanes are in on the airports, but other than that, almost all American military stuff has disappeared. A few odd buildings here and there, but it's not recognizable from, you know, places that we went, where our base camps were and whatnot.
Right. There was one base camp that was held, I think, 30,000 men, and I guess you go back there now and it's just farm fields or whatever. You know, the guys that have gone back said they're stunned. They keep looking around trying to figure out where they were.
Yeah. Quezon, when we did go up to the DMZ, and Quezon is like that. There's a museum, and I kept asking the interpreter, now, where was the airstrip? Where was the airstrip? Because you see so many pictures of that. And he'd say, it's right over there. But it was just unrecognizable. Well, the nature's taken over a lot of it. I mean, there's 40-foot trees in a lot of places.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Now, when you get up to areas like that, I remember everywhere you went along Highway 1, there would be the stands, the roadside stands, selling to the GIs. Do you still have that in some of the areas?
They do, except not so. They look a little more prosperous, I guess you'd say. A little bigger, a lot of construction, and maybe you know, not near as scary.
I guess you guys didn't live in shelter halves. What were the accommodations like?
Well. We've stayed pretty much first class all the way in Saigon. We stayed at the Continental, which is an old 1880s French hotel, absolutely beautiful. Right across the street was the Caravelle, where they had the 5 o'clock Follies. That has now got about a 30-story tower behind the hotel. That's pretty amazing. We got into the Rex Hotel, which is another older, gorgeous hotel, and they're just trying to triple their space to keep up with demand.
Really?
And then Da Nang and Quy Nhon are right on the beach, and we stayed in just four-star or five-star hotels.
We've got a little over 30 seconds left. What about the food?
Food's wonderful. I didn't have a clue what I was eating, but I'd say, you know, if you had an interpreter or some Vietnamese to order for you, you just took your chance, and if you liked it, you ate more of it, and if you didn't, but it was excellent and pretty inexpensive.
Good. Don, we're going to be going to a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about how you guys traveled around. How
okay.
did you find your way around?
Okay.
And we'll be right back right after this break.
Gary Lilly & Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Now, I don't know if you folks out there are laughing, but I'm laughing. Dale, you flew a helicopter. You monitored 5 radios at a time. You had to do different things with each foot, each hand. And is that board a little bit overwhelming back there?
Today it is. I apologize to everybody out there. And one of the rules of communication, never apologize. But I for whatever reason is when I punch somebody else up on the phone, I lose the one that's there before. I'm going to try and call Jim Doyle now. And we'll see what happens.
Okay. Don, you're still on the line.
I'm still here.
Okay. So if we do lose you on this next go around trying to get Jim Doyle, it's really been good talking to you. So until Dale tries that out, tell us how you got around. You get into did you line up interpreters and drivers ahead of time?
Well, that the benefit of going with a guy like Jim Doyle that's been there is he had just enough experience. But at the hotels are people that can line up tours, and we got in a car with a driver that the hotel had lined up, and then traveling from one place to another. Now, we flew Air Vietnam, so that amounted to getting to the airport, which is no real problem.
Hi,
but from Quy Nhon, or from Pleiku to Quy Nhon, was a 3.5-hour drive, there was an outfit that lined that up for us.
Was that beforehand, before you arrived, or was that at the hotel?
Well, kind of both. It was actually in place before we got there.
Okay.
But the actual driver and the actual car were kind of confirmed at the last, the night before.
All right. Now, I never drove with anybody over there. The only thing I saw were their buses that were made for probably 30 people, and, of course, they'd have about 60 people on them.
That's right.
And but I did go on R&R over in Okinawa. Geez, that hurts to say. But the sidewalks were just as good as the streets to those taxi cab drivers over there. How are the drivers in Vietnam?
Well, there's the primary mode of transportation is motorbike.
Okay.
Probably 10, 15 motorbikes to one automobile. There are no rules that I could tell. I spent about 3 weeks trying to figure it out, and there just are no rules. It was It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Don, we've got Jim Doyle on the line, and I'm going to push the button, and supposedly you guys will still both, they won't, Dale's saying he doesn't know.
He doesn't know. Well, if I, it's been a pleasure if you lose me. Let's just say that.
Okay, it's been a pleasure talking to you, too, and I guess I pushed this green flashing button. All right, here we go. Who's there?
It's Don.
Don, is Jim Doyle there? I'm going to push that button again. Hello,
Gary.
Jim?
Gary?
Yes.
This How are is, you?
I'm great, Jim. It's been an adventure. We just lost Don, so I'm glad I got a chance to say goodbye to him. Jim, you've been back to Vietnam 16 times now, right?
Right.
First time was, what took you back the first time?
It was part of the Vietnam Veterans of America's Veterans Initiative back in February of 95, where we've been collecting information on missing Vietnamese and turning it over to them. And they, in turn, have been a lot more cooperative about providing information about missing Americans.
And then you made some trips with the Veterans Initiative, and after that you started going back on your own, is that right?
Correct. A small group of us who'd been on the Veterans Initiative saw that there were needs in Vietnam that, because of IRS and other legal issues, VVA could not get involved in, and decided to put together a small humanitarian group, very small, and do what we could, basically, to finish the job we were sent there to do 40 years ago, and that's help the Vietnamese people.
And the people kept interrupting us. As a CB, we were doing a lot of projects out in the villages, and of course we were prevented from doing it most of the time, but how did that help you? You were a rifleman. What years were you there, Jim?
I was there in 1969.
You've carried the Purple Heart?
Yes.
And you saw some times where you lost some friends?
Yeah, quite a few times, as a matter of fact. More times than I care to remember.
And how have these trips helped you, or have they?
Well, they've kind of restored a sense in me that, and this was helped by the Vietnamese, as a matter of fact, the soldiers, former soldiers we met, who told us that it was never about you, that you did the honorable thing by serving your country. And, you know, that, quite honestly, Gary, that was more respect and acknowledgement than I got from my own neighbors. So when your former enemy can treat you as an honorable individual for serving your country, I think that's a huge leap forward.
I can imagine. Did it catch you by surprise?
I certainly did. And I'll tell you, one of the seminal moments for me was in June of 1994. I happened to be in Washington, D.C. on some business, and I got up a little early so I could watch the 50th anniversary commemoration of D-Day. And they were interviewing, well, I guess this gentleman was probably in his late 70s or early 80s, and was amongst the first wave to come ashore at Omaha Beach. And he started crying. And the reporter just let him cry on camera for a while, and finally the gentleman said, you know, he says, for 50 years I've hated the German people, and I don't know why. Today it stops. And I thought to myself, Vietnam veterans don't have 50 years left to get over either their hatred of the Vietnamese or of the war or of the whole bag of tricks that was Vietnam throughout the 60s and into the 70s. We're dying, I think, at a faster rate than any other generation before us, or generation. And frankly, I don't have the time to waste hating but anybody anymore. It took a lot out of me for 30 years, and I normalized relations with Vietnam a long time before my government did.
You told me one time about when you got off the plane for the first time. What happened?
Well, I was kind of alternating between thrill and terror as the plane prepared to land in Hanoi, and at that time I was accompanied by our former national president, Tom Corey, who is a quadriplegic and has been since the first day of the Tet Offensive in 1968. And I volunteered to carry Tom down the stairs of the airplane because they didn't have jet ramps at that time, and it was pretty primitive by today's standards. And I figured if I help carry Tom down, it'll distract me, it'll keep my mind occupied. And the three of us carried Tom down the ramp. And as soon as I hit the asphalt, literally, Gary, I felt like I'd come home. Because I was 19 years old when I was in Vietnam. That's where I grew up. And that's where I made all my friends. And when I left in January of 70, I felt like I'd left all my friends behind. And so going back in February 95 was probably the single best thing I've ever done in my life, with the exception of meeting my wife and having a family.
We've got about 3.5 minutes left, so there's a lot of memories to cram into that 3.5 minutes, Jim. Have you seen, what was the attitude of the Vietnamese people in Hanoi back then, and how does that compare to today?
Back then it was very open and warm, and today it's very open and warm. If it wasn't for the Asian faces, you would think you were in any city in America. The way businesses are thriving, people are, the spirit of entrepreneurship is just going at a breakneck pace. Young people are opening up new businesses. Of course, with the technological age, they're involved with computers and the internet, and that's a big part of it. But it's a very comforting place to be. They have a genuine fondness for Americans, anything that is American, music, clothing, and anything like that. And again, they're very, very welcoming and very warm and genuine in their feelings towards Americans.
Have you ever been able to travel up to the mountains where the Montagnards are, the Hmong, the Daga, the Khmers?
As a matter of fact, we took a trip to Pleiku this time and went to one of the what they refer to as the ethnic villages. I believe there's 19 separate ethnic groups, hill tribe groups in Vietnam. And they were actually on a coffee plantation growing coffee. And Vietnam, as I understand, has become the third largest exporter of coffee in the world. And I like my coffee so black and thick and muddy that you can stand a spoon up in it. And
I hear you.
That's what I get in Vietnam. So I really look forward to the coffee there because it's very strong and it has a very unique taste. But, we did spend quite a bit of time in what we used to call the Central Highlands and amongst some of the folks of the ethnic tribes, and they seem to be doing quite well.
Well, that's good to hear. I've heard mixed reports out of that part of the world. We've got about a minute left. Are there any things that you wanted to say on your own in this last minute?
Well, the only thing I would say is to any Vietnam veteran out there who has ever given the slightest thought to returning to Vietnam, I would tell them to hold that thought and go ahead and go. Save your money and go to Vietnam, because everyone I've talked to who's gone back said it was the best thing they ever did.
Okay, and I understand that we don't have a minute and a half left. So, Jim, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Gary.
You bet. It's been fascinating. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Marine Scholars Fund, Quantum Physical Therapy, Legal Help for Vets, Len Pitlack, CPA, Schrader Yachts, Sperry Van Ness, Lillian Associates, Pat the Handyman. Do we have time to talk about what's on next week?
We're going to be talking to the Air Force Supply Command.
All right. Well, tune in and find out how it all gets to you. In the meantime,
logistics are amazing.
You are dismissed.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.